It's time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitten Madness.
And here he goes, defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Here are your hosts, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes.
Hello there and good morning. It is Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Jacob Harrison and back this week, Dejon Hughes. We're set to talk Michigan sports for the next hour. We've got plenty to get into with the Detroit Pistons and the conclusion of what has been a storybook season for them Thursday night. And then a little bit of recap on the Detroit Lions draft, as well as the rest of the NFC North. And, of course, our picks at the end of this segment. If you kept up with them, you might have a good idea of something absolutely hilarious that happened last week while I was here all on my lonesome. So with that being said, DJ, how are you doing, man? How was the week off?
Oh, I mean, I was busy on that week off.
It was not week off from the show.
It wasn't like a Jacob going to Alabama and kicking his feet up, relaxing with family. I was working,
but no,
exactly. I needed that little bit of time. Was just enjoying it with a group of kids I mentor. They had a conference and they had a great time with each other and the other guys from the other chapters of their organization, and played some basketball, some football, had some good times and laughs. So it's nice to be back here talking good old Michigan sports.
Let's do it. So Thursday night, the Detroit Pistons unfortunately came up short in game six and are now officially eliminated from the 2025 NBA playoffs. Hey, they lasted longer than the Lakers. There's plenty of good things besides that snarky comment I just made to take away from the Pistons in 2025. They're really historic in a lot of ways that deserve to be acknowledged. And being headed up by BJ Bickerstaff and Cade Cunningham coming into his own this year, and to become a team that had a 44-win turnaround. Like, they did some unprecedented things, but it has all come to an end as Jalen Brunson nailed a three-point shot with just seconds to go to break the tie and give the Knicks a 116-113 win inside LCA, which had been brutalizing Brunson the entirety of the series. A lot of crazy things. We also saw, like, the growth of Assar Thompson in this series. We saw good things from Malik Beasley. We saw great things from Cade Cunningham. Of course, I think something that might be overlooked a little bit is, you know, it kind of hurts to go that series without Isaiah Stewart for the most part. But nonetheless, I mean, it's not necessarily the way anybody wanted it to end, but it is kind of close to how you kind of expected it, that they would be competitive in a wild card series and we would see how the team would grow from there. But just to look back on the 2024-2025 season for the Detroit Pistons, it's a monumental success. But what else can you add to it, DJ, from a perspective of just watching how this team has grown over the past calendar year?
First off, I want to talk to all the Pistons fans out there that are blaming Cade Cunningham. Stop. Stop.
Help you do with that.
You're ridiculous. You're expecting one guy to come in and change everything and just be this star that takes you to the second round when he doesn't really have a ton of help.
Stop it.
The most playoff bound player on this team is Tobias Harris. Let's please act realistic here. Maybe we could say Tim Hardaway Jr., but neither one of them have ever actually really done anything. So how far are we expecting a Pistons team to go? And also, we've talked about this a little bit. The Knicks, they play where? And arguably the mecca of basketball, New York, Madison Square Garden. What's bringing in more money? A Pistons team that really only Detroit likes, or the Knicks? I would argue that the Knicks do. Plain and simple. But, I mean, even if we want to get away from all of that, look at the series. The most lopsided game in this was game one, and that was a 9-point victory for the Knicks. The very next game, a 6-point victory for the Pistons. The next game, a 2-point victory for the Knicks. The next game, a 1-point victory for the Knicks. Then the Pistons win by three, then the Knicks win by three. So did Cade really not do his job?
Right.
Or were the Knicks just a little bit better than the Pistons? I mean, the Pistons were 6 in the East. The Knicks were 3. Are we really, like, what are we actually talking about here? They played close games all year against the Knicks, minus 1 in the regular season where they got mollywhopped by 30. But all the rest of those games were single-digit games. And then every single playoff game they had against them was single digits. Be happy for the success we have. Rome wasn't built in a day, bro. LeBron James didn't win his first championship until 2012.
Hold on.
What are we talking about here?
Cade Cunningham in the postseason averaged 25 points, 5 turnovers, 1.8 steals, 1.3 blocks, 8 or almost 9 assists, and 8 rebounds. A lot of those numbers significantly better than his regular season production. The biggest downturn you saw in the 6 games compared to the 70 he played in the regular season was his three-point shooting, which dropped almost 20 points, percentage points. I guess I should clarify, this isn't politics. But, I mean, the three-point shooting notwithstanding, you can't. Anybody who would seriously blame Cade Cunningham for the shortcomings of a team that won 14 games last year, you're off your rocker, dude. That's an NBA All-Star. That is the future of this place. And keep in mind, a lot of things are about to change because those guys you just mentioned are not guaranteed to come back. And they've got to rework the roster around Cade Cunningham's now huge salary. And they've got young pieces to do that, but they also need those veteran presences that help spurn this along. Because if you look at the differences in last year's squad and this year's squad, Tobias Harris and Tim Hardaway Jr. were massive changes in the roster build. Of course, the progression of guys like Assar Thompson, like Jaden Ivey before his injury, Isaiah Stewart and Jalen Duren, all of those guys certainly help catapults you up into a next space, but I mean, this is all a team effort, and it was still a team that coming into the season was not anticipated to win 30 more games than it did last year. It was just hoping to double it. So I can't take anybody seriously that wants to pin any of this on Cade Cunningham, because that's just not living in reality. I know a lot of people do that these days, but let's be real.
Yeah, and I mean, not even just the play, just he was fantastic all year. Like, this team,
yeah,
got hot at all the right moments and made a lot of great things happen. And they fell short in the playoffs like, checks notes, 15 other teams do. Because only one team wins the NBA championship. Only one team raises the Larry O'Brien in the middle of June.
Every sport, only one team finishes happy.
And this year it just wasn't the Pistons. But you know what? They also finished better than 16 other teams who weren't in the playoffs at all. Or, sorry, not 16, 14.
14.
14 other teams that were not in the playoffs. So what are we really complaining about? This team is progressing. Let's not dampen it with them expecting them to be the 2004 Pistons. Newsflash, they're not. If you haven't noticed, there isn't a single person connected to the 2004 Pistons that's connected to this team. Not a single person. So what are we really saying here? We're saying that it's a new era of Detroit Pistons basketball, and let's enjoy it for what it is. There are a lot of good pieces here, but most of them are young. So that means it's going to take a little bit of time for them to be the best in the NBA. It's going to take a little bit of time for them to find out the formula that's going to work in the postseason, and contrary to what worked in the regular season. I won't say exactly the exact words that were used by Patrick Beverley when describing the difference between playoff basketball and regular season basketball. But basically, he was saying regular season is just every day.
Yeah.
No real excitement. You just do what you got
to
do.
That's your 9-to-5.
But playoffs, there's nothing but excitement. You're here to prove yourself. It's bringing up the 9-to-5, right? Your first year or so at a 9-to-5, you're doing everything you can to prove that you should be there. You deserve that amount of money you're making. Maybe you deserve a little bit more. But then after 2, 3, 4, 5 years, you're like, bruh, it's the same thing every single day.
Right. You get
I'm just
going
and handle my business and go home.
Yep.
That's exactly what the NBA is like. The regular season is every day for them. They go in, they handle their business, and they go home. Because all they're trying to do is win enough games to get into the playoffs. Once they're in the playoffs, it's turned up to the max. It's that first year. They got to prove once again that they deserve to be there. They deserve to be the best. They deserve to get a pay raise, all of those things. So the Pistons just have to now find what's going to work for them in the playoffs as they're entering a new era because playoff basketball is different than what it used to be before. Mm-hmm. I think the Pistons are in a great spot to continue getting better.
Yeah, and as long as your trip to the playoffs is productive and you do the things that you said, you prove that you belong there, and that there's no discrepancy in the idea that, hey, you earned your way in, and then you were competitive against one of the best teams in the league, and you came up short. But you pointed out the point differential in every game except for game one. This was a team that proved that they could compete night in and night out with the New York Knicks, a team fully capable, based on my perspective and based off of how some of those playoffs have already gone, fully capable of winning an NBA championship in this landscape. Maybe not the most likely to do it. They got to get past Boston, and good luck with that. But no, the Pistons have proven that they're capable, and that the guys that are on this roster now and will be next year and moving forward, those guys can continue to carry the torch. Now everything comes back. Now we're in the off season. Everything comes back to Trahan Langdon, and he's got to reshape this roster, take advantage of some availability in the cap space, and see if he can make a move or continue to build the same way he did. Bring back some of those veterans who have just been there and done that and are making one more run here, like Tobias Harris and Tim Hardaway Jr., and lean on that, or continue to just build through the draft because they've got all of their picks for the next 7 years, which is absolutely absurd. They're in a good position to continue to grow, and that's exactly where they need to be after a successful season, getting back to where Detroit wants them to be, and that's consistently in the postseason. All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll recap everything that happened last weekend at the NFL draft. First round was all we could talk about last week, and I exhausted myself on that, but there were more things that the Detroit Lions did that were fantastic, more things that happened across the NFC North that Lions fans should be paying attention to, and we'll discuss them next here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK. Back here on Mid Madness, 95.3 WBCK, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes. Let's talk about the NFL draft. That was last week. It was pretty exciting. A lot of crazy things happened. I heard the name Shedeur Sanders entirely way too many times over a four-day span. But we all made it through, and I think the Detroit Lions came out a good bit better for it. Tyleik Williams being the first round pick, number 28 overall. Then they head down to the SEC for most of the rest of their picks. Tate Ratledge out of Georgia is a dog, good pick. Isaac Tesla, a wide receiver from Arkansas, bit underrated, but a solid early third rounder. Miles Frazier, a good late round pick from LSU. Dan Jackson and Dominic Lovett from Georgia in the seventh round as well. Hey, if you're in the seventh round, there's a couple of dogs sitting there. Why not make that investment? And then I think arguably my favorite pick of the draft for them is a sixth round pick. I don't know, a lot of people are probably going to say, well, that's dumb. But Ahmad, I'm going to butcher his last name, but I remember watching this dude in the playoffs. Ahmad Hassanine, probably butchered it. Boise State edge rusher. That dude had basically a broken ankle in the playoffs, and he was still running all over the field trying to make something happen for Boise State against Penn State. It ended up not going their way, and you know, he wasn't able to be as productive as he usually is, but dude was a freak. He caught my attention in that game, doing all he could for the team, and I know that's the kind of guys that Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes want in the building here in the Motor City. But DJ, I'll get your impressions first, especially if you want to talk about Tyleik Williams being from, you know, that school down south. But nonetheless, I mean, Detroit Lions seem to have another successful draft under Brad Holmes.
Look, as long as Mr. Williams doesn't turn out like the last guy we drafted from that team down there, I have no problems. And by we, I mean the Detroit Lions.
Who are you referring to?
Jeff Okuda.
Oh, okay. Yeah. My first thought went to Taylor Decker.
Oh yeah.
No. I was like, that was a long time ago, and he's pretty good.
Yeah, no, not Decker, not at all. Jeff Okuda, who was just like a few years ago.
Yeah, Jeff Okuda was
phased
bad
out quick.
Yeah.
I thought they should have gone edge first.
Yeah, I agree.
But this isn't terrible. And then you're, like you said, they're able to pick up Ahmed later on as an edge pick. I thought the Lions did a fantastic job in this draft of going and getting what they need.
Yeah.
They drafted two O guards. They needed an O guard, but truly one of them could play center, which is the other need that they had. Like, it's not uncommon to those three in the middle kind of rotate between those three positions, depending on who's there and who's serviceable at what position. So there's a chance that we may see Ratledge or Frazier end up playing some center for the Lions this year or in the next couple of years. And then they went and got some more wide receiver talent. I like Tesala a little more.
You just emphasize the vowels differently.
Elon, you got another kid, bro?
No, thanks.
a little more than I like Dominic Lovett, but I think Lovett will add something that this crew doesn't already have. So I really feel like the Lions went out and did exactly what they were supposed to do in drafting every position that they really needed, i.e. edge and guard. I think those were two things that they really needed to get at. And, I mean, hypothetically, with Williams coming in, there may be a guy or two that you currently have playing D-tackle that could do some edge work for you as well. And maybe one of your edge guys bounces back to your linebacker group. There's a lot that can be done here, but I really feel like the Lions addressed their most concerning problems as they should have in the draft.
Yeah, I still like Tyleek Williams because he's a good enough pass rusher to still be of some assistance to Aiden Hutchinson on one side. That being said, I think a lot of people are still kind of like sat back because you and I are full agreement. They probably should have went edge first, but there wasn't really a guy at 28 that was necessarily worth that pick unless you wanted to reach on a kid out of Marshall. And I don't know if you'd noticed a trend here with Detroit, but they're doing something very similar to what Philadelphia does and what Pittsburgh tries to do. But a lot of successful drafting teams are just taken from the best pools of talent that are available in college football. They're not trying to outsmart people. They're taking really good players from really good teams. And last I checked, as much as we all hated up here, the Ohio State Buckeyes won the national championship last year. It's not a bad idea to go ahead and take him. It's also not a bad idea to draft three Georgia Bulldogs. I'm an Alabama fan. I wish they were all Crimson Tide guys. I loved the trend that they were on of taking Alabama guys, but there just wasn't one there, right? So they took the best possible player available. Matt Miller compares the dude to BJ Hill. And if you're a big football nerd, you know that's a good that's a good player to be compared to, I guess I should say simply. But the need at guard gets filled by Tate Ratledge in the second round. You also don't reach for an interior offensive lineman in the first round, so I like that strategy as well. I really appreciate the way that Brad Holmes approaches the draft. That being said, something's got to happen between now and August on the other side of the defensive line. For Aiden Hutchinson, he needs the help because his production, while great, could be so much more if there was just another edge rusher over there. Now I get it. Maybe just getting healthy will help out in that regard. And maybe a guy like Ahmed from Boise State can step in, sooner rather than later, despite being a sixth round pick because he's got a great motor. Maybe that all solves itself, but I think there's a guy out in Cincinnati who's still pretty upset and doesn't want to be there anymore. And he could just move a couple miles north and come play in Detroit and be the bookend to Aiden Hutchinson. And I think that's best case scenario from here, because otherwise there's no other way to improve the edge position opposite of Hutchinson. So they've got to look down there to Cincinnati and start really eyeballing Hendrickson there and try to pair him up.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that's going to go down over the next couple of weeks. I think the bigger thing for me and looking at how my team decided to draft this year as I try and find it. Okay. That's weird. They were all the way at the front of this list of teams. That's definitely in alphabetical order.
G's pretty early on in the alphabet.
I mean, but it's not before A. I do like the Matthew Golden pick a lot. I like the Savion Williams pick a lot. Why do I like those a lot? Because they're wide receivers. Something I've been asking for ages. But if I want to be honest here, my two favorite picks on this list, or three, I'll pick my three favorite picks on this list. I'll start with Anthony Belton from North Carolina State at O tackle. Newsflash, we ain't getting my boy Bakhtiari back. And what we had at tackle last year just wasn't good enough. So I really like them at least going to get some competition at the offensive tackle spot and forcing guys to either step up and take control of the spot they want, or let somebody else come in and take it who wants to play. The same can be said for John Williams in the seventh round out of Cincinnati that they picked, another offensive tackle that's going to come in and compete for those spots. And then I love the pick of Baron Sorrell out of Texas, the edge guy. defense has always been the strong part of the Packers. Even when they had Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre and some pretty good receivers, the defense is what has carried them. So continuing to pour into the defense, I think, is huge. Half of our draft picks this year went to the defense. Linebacker, D-tackle, and cornerback were also drafted in this draft. I think we went out and finally did not only what the fans were asking, but for what the players on this team were asking for. I mean, we can go back to right before the playoffs or right after that playoff loss. Josh Jacobs came out flat and was like, look, I love the homies in the wide receiver room. They can do some good things. But we need a true number one. He's not wrong. The wide receiver room is great for the Packers, but there is no true number one wide receiver who can reliably get open. That's a problem in the NFL. I'm not saying Golden's going to come in and be that guy right away.
How confident are you that Matthew Golden is going to be a number one wide receiver?
But he did get pretty open in college.
He wasn't the number one receiver in his own offense in college.
No, and that helped him a lot.
This is a guy that got a lot of recognition because he ran really fast in shorts in Indianapolis.
I mean,
let's be real.
Hey, but let's be honest here. He ran really fast during the season, and that's how he was getting
true.
Open.
True. I'm not saying that he's...
And if we want to look back at the Packers playbook and somebody who literally just got open because they ran fast... Marquez Valdes-Scantling, he just couldn't catch the ball. Wow. So if we can replicate that with a guy who can catch the ball, I don't have any problems here.
I think of other people.
I still
people.
Don't think he's our answer to the number one option. I really think we should have gone after a T. Higgins, a DK Metcalf, a Cooper Kupp, guys who are available to either trade for or go after in free agency. But this will settle for now until we can find someone who can fill that number one slot.
So five wide receivers went in the first 40 picks. Matthew Golden was the third. The first two obviously were not available to you. T-Mac from Arizona goes in the top 10. Egbuka from Ohio State only goes a few picks earlier. I'd say both of those guys seem like they could be number one wide receivers in the NFL. The two guys that go after Golden are Jaden Higgins from Iowa State to the Houston Texans. Houston is going full Cincinnati. Let's just get all the wide receivers, no offensive line. Let's play good defense and let's hope for the best with CJ Stroud. Best of luck to them. And then Luther Burden III from Missouri, he goes at the seventh pick of the second round. I think that's number 39 overall. I would argue Higgins or Burden would have been just fine at that 23 slot, and Golden might have been waiting around for you if they make it past Green Bay, because then people probably view his, I don't know, his prospects a little bit differently and don't value that speed quite as much. I think the Bears got a better receiver at better value by taking Luther Burden III at 39 than the Packers did at 23, taking Matthew Golden. Because I agree. I don't think Matthew Golden is going to be a number one receiver in Green Bay. I think in Green Bay, your best hope with the receivers on the roster is still Christian Watson coming out and taking that job by the horns as he should have 2 years ago and not get injured. That's your number one wide receiver, even with finally picking a wide receiver in the first round and really hamming it up to the crowd too, by the way. Great job, Green Bay. Just trying to make your fan base feel good is not always the right course of action. I mean, I was watching the Pat McAfee stream, and when that pick was made, or before that pick was made, because it seemed so ridiculously obvious that that's what was going to happen, Mike McCarthy is sitting there saying, listed off all of the second-round wide receivers, including Jordy Nelson, including Devontae Adams, and all these guys that they had taken in the second round that had turned into fantastic receivers. And I see two guys taken in the second round, and really, you can go to the rest. Trey Harris and Jack Beck ought to be great for the Chargers and the Raiders. But I see two number one potential wide receivers that went less than 15 picks afterwards. Packers did not choose. And that's a bit of a concern to me. We'll continue the discussion. We're also going to talk about the Bears and the Vikings draft decisions next here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK.
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Mitten Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
Here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes. We're still talking about the NFL draft and the impacts made by the teams in the NFC North. DJ, you want to pick on the Bears or the Vikings first?
Let's pick on the Vikings, and then we can end just right. Absolutely smashing on the Bears.
Yeah, because I'm not a fan of a lot of things that the Bears did. I did just mention one thing that I was a fan of, but the Vikings also have a smaller class. They only made 5 picks, a first, a third, a fifth, and 2 6th round picks. So there's not a whole lot to get into, and especially with that first pick being on the offensive line, Donovan Jackson, who's a fantastic offensive lineman from Ohio State. Holy cow, the NFC North really loaded up on Ohio State guys this year. There was a lot to pick from. What happens when you win national championships. Nonetheless, he's going to slide in there to an already fantastic offensive line and help keep J.J. McCarthy healthy for his first full season in the NFL. Speaking of McCarthy, he also got a new weapon in Ty Felton out of Maryland. He's going to jump into an already fantastic wide receiving core. Does not have to do much to be worthy of a third round selection because he's not going to get too many touches behind Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, and Jalen Naylor, not to mention the tight ends there in Minnesota. They also took an edge rusher from Georgia. Not a bad idea. I'd do the same thing. Tyrion Ingram Dawkins joins them. Kobe King, who was a solid linebacker for Penn State, goes in the 6th round as well. Gavin Bartholomew, a tight end from Pittsburgh, is going to come in and join TJ Hockenson in that room in Minnesota. DJ, I know there's not a lot to pull from the Vikings, a team that went 14-3, who's going to have a first-year quarterback under center next year, unless Aaron Rodgers comes in and really blows up the NFL, which I doubt is going to happen. But it looks like the Vikings did a pretty solid job of building around McCarthy. Obviously, there's a lot already in place in Minnesota. They didn't have to do a whole lot this year.
Yeah, I think Minnesota did a pretty decent job. I feel like their biggest problems are defense, in my opinion, and in their 5 picks, they went out and got 2. And I think if you ask me, getting Kobe King to slide to the 6th round is huge. I thought he was very good, not only for Penn State, but just in the country in general. Playing in the Big Ten, he was a dominant linebacker. I think that will transfer over well. And honestly, you know, taking 2 out of your 3 picks to address your biggest issue is what the draft is about. But then they, like you said, they went out and got a couple more receiving options. We want to be honest here. They got Aaron Jones in the backfield, but they are a pass first team. Mm-hmm. The Vikings have been a pass first team for a while now. I don't expect that to change anytime soon. So that and that's what going and getting Ty Felton and Gavin Bartholomew will tell you, is that they want to continue to throwing the ball. They already have some of the best receivers and tight ends, and not only just the NFC North, but the NFC. And they're going and getting more because they want to continue to pass the ball. They want to continue to stretch defenses out. They want to continue to spread the field and be able to have multiple options across the field and then still be able to use their running back and quarterbacks as they would like to. But like you said, Donovan Jackson, hate that he's from that team down there, but he will come in and help this team in that front three at the offensive guard position. I'm almost positive he will remain at the guard position. I don't really see him playing a lot of center. He moves very well body-wise for that position to be able to pull and those things. Being, you know, 4th at that position, they're picking him up at the 24th pick, I think is pretty big for the Vikings. They're going to be able to put some things together over the next couple of years.
For sure. Yeah, it will be interesting because you kind of pointed it out, and it's not something I'd given much thought to. But it will be interesting if they continue with that pass-first approach, because that's not what J.J. McCarthy did in college. Like, in college, it was very run-first, and then let's get the ball to our playmakers in space, which we've opened up because of the running game. Aaron Jones can certainly still go, but he's not going to dominate a defense with his carries, and there's really not somebody else on that roster that's going to do that. I don't know. It seemed like a good year for the Vikings to take a running back, and they didn't do it. So, interesting decisions from them. Let's move on to the Bears. The Bears were the only team in the NFC North to take a player from Michigan. They took Colston Loveland with the 10th overall pick, a pick that a lot of people love. I'm not one of them. Luther Barden III is their first second-round pick out of Missouri. He can step in and join, again, a fantastic young wide receiver crew there for Caleb Williams. Ozzie Trapillo, Boston College offensive lineman, added to the mix. Shamar Turner was a fantastic grab in the late second round to play defensive line. They also get a linebacker from Maryland in the 4th round. Zach Frazier is a UTSA cornerback in the 5th round. Luke Newman out of Michigan State to play offensive tackle as well. And a Rutgers running back there in the 7th. So they had a lot of picks, a lot of early picks. I think they did a fantastic job in the second round. I'm not crazy about Colston Loveland. And the biggest reason why is because somebody else was still on the board. Tyler Warren is a more prolific tight end. I think he's the guy that's worthy of a top 10 selection compared to Colston Loveland. I like Colston Loveland. Don't get me wrong. Still a first round selection. And I think he'll do good things with the Bears. I don't think it was a good decision by the Bears to choose Loveland over Warren, and honestly, for a team like the Bears in their position to spend a first round pick on a tight end when you already have one of the highest paid tight ends in the league on your roster, it's just not an intelligent decision, in my opinion. But I know you love Colson Loveland. I know you like Luther Burden III. I know you hate the Bears. So what are your impressions on their draft class in 2025?
I feel bad for those guys. They're going in a position where
they're going to an okay offense. Come on.
I mean, it's just, it's loaded. In terms like, it's going to be hard for them to get their spot. They already have two or three proven tight ends on their roster. They already have two, three, four proven receivers on their roster with so far a quarterback that shows he can't really win games. So come on. Come on. The Bears started coaching malpractice.
That team was loaded last year.
I'm not saying it's all on him.
Yeah.
But we know how these things go. They fall on two people. Coaches and quarterbacks.
Yeah.
He's got to take some of that blame. And you know how I feel about him in general. I said this last year when they drafted him, that I don't think he's a winner and they should have kept Justin Fields. I think the Bears have Justin Fields last year. They're a playoff team, but that wasn't the case. I think these guys are just going into a tough scenario for them at their specific positions.
Yeah.
But I do think the Bears did a great job in their draft. They went and answered the things that they needed to continue to make this team better, continue to make this team competitive. This team looks eerily similar to the 06 Jay Cutler Bears.
Ooh.
That's what scares me, is that they're putting together the pieces that makes their organization successful again. It doesn't mean it will work with this iteration, but there are pieces there toward working towards success, and we may see the Bears end up back in their winning ways. It's just a lot of unknowns for now, and then, like I said, their top two draft picks isn't even a guarantee that they see the kind of time that people feel they should see.
I think they'll see the time. I agree with what you led with. There's only one football. And let's be real, as good as Caleb Williams is, that offense was not nearly as productive as it should have been last year. Because again, a team was pretty stacked with talent. Unproven talent in a lot of areas. Veteran talent with guys like Keenan Allen, who you don't know how much more they've got to give. Obviously, that didn't last very long in Chicago. And the coaching issues in Chicago have been a storied affair, right? Because they've had good quarterbacks. Like, they've got Caleb Williams now. He's not a bad quarterback. They had Justin Fields. He's not a bad quarterback. They had Mitchell Trubisky. And despite how bad he is, they got a fantastic season out of him 1 year and even went to the playoffs. It's been coaching. It's been coaching and a lack of patience. I don't know that the selections that they made afford the new coaching staff more patience from the front office. And I don't know that they actually accelerate the growth of Caleb Williams in the way that they would like, because they addressed things that don't necessarily need to be addressed. They did not need a Luther Burden III. It's great that they have him. Now they have potentially two number one wide receivers on their offense. They didn't need Colson Loveland. It's great that they have him, but now they have two tight ends who operate really similarly. They're both inline blocking tight ends who can make plays in the open field off of play action. And Chicago's not the team using play action like a classic traditional NFL offense. I don't understand the process. It can work. There's plenty of potential for it to work. I don't get it. They should have invested more on the offensive line, invested more on the defensive line, because everywhere else they have spent money in free agency or spent money in contracts to upgrade those positions. They didn't have to do it in the draft. You've got to pick and choose how you make your upgrades between free agency and the draft. You cannot make the same type of upgrades in both, or you're just being redundant and you're not helping your team. But it is what it is. The Bears are probably going to finish in last anyway. you know, they might finish closer to 500. I'll give them that. The other three teams are going to be competing for the crown in the NFC North and potentially playoff spots as well. But we'll continue the conversation when we return. It is time for us to make our picks. Last week didn't go super well for me, so just be prepared to hear a ridiculous stat. We'll get to it next on Mitten Madness. 95.3 WBCK.
95.3 WBCK.
Here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes. Time for us to make our picks, which also means looking back on last week and what happened, update standings. And this week, that's my least favorite part of the show.
Yeah, so over the last 2 weeks, since I was out last week, we didn't get an update. I will update us from the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, we both went 3-3. This past week, I went 3-3. You went 0-6. That's going to give us records for the last 2 weeks of 6-6 for me and 3-9 for you. As we update those, that has me sitting back in front, 38-28, while you are one game behind at 37-29.
Oof.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's rough.
I needed that.
I've led the entirety of this round, and it's all gone, just like that.
So gracious to get it back.
All right, let's get started. I'll get us going in the UFL, where we've got one pretty entertaining game this weekend. It's on Sunday, May the 4th. A little Star Wars energy at Ford Field when the Panthers host the DC Defenders. The Defenders are 4-1. The Panthers are 3-2. But Michigan is a 2.5-point favorite at home. That 42.5 over under. It's the UFL. The U stands for under. That said, DJ, who you got?
Listen, I went against the boys last week. So if you think I'm doing it again, you're right. Give me the Defenders.
Well,
I trust them a little bit more. They're 4-1 on the year, and if I'm not mistaken, their one loss of the year is to it's to the Brahmas. That's weird. They definitely shouldn't have lost to the Brahmas of all people. I guess that's better than losing to the Showboats. Which someone managed to do. It was the Stallions. The Stallions managed to lose to the Showboats. But the Defenders just have one of the best defenses and offenses in the league. They're doing a fantastic job of taking control of games. And in the standings, you can see that they have a plus 22 differential, which is second best in the league. 117 points on the board, which is also third best in the league. And they've only given up 95, which is nearing the top as well. So I'm going to trust those metrics to continue the way they have been, and the Defenders come out on top.
I think the Panthers just perform better at home and the Defenders perform worse on the road. And you know what? I took the Panthers over my team last week and it did not pay off, so I'm going to give them a second chance. I'm going to take the Panthers.
That is going to send us over onto the hardwood. Let's step onto the hardwood. Why don't we? Cavaliers, the number one seed in the Eastern Conference this year, made their way into the second round. The second round series for them starts on Sunday, Sunday, May 4th, against the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers were 20-20 on the road this year. And they're 34-7 at home for the Cavs. This game is in Cleveland. The Pacers won this series 3-1 during the year. But as a reminder, the Pistons beat the Knicks 3-1 in the regular season series as well. How do you see game one going in this second round series?
Yeah, I think after hearing the difference between regular season and playoff basketball during a break, I'm going to stick with Cleveland. I think they're going to get the job done in game one. I think they'll get it done in five. I think the Pacers will give them some fight, but Cleveland was the top dog in all of the NBA, so I'm not going to shy away from them now. Cavs win game one.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go with Cavs here too. They've just been exceptional at home. I think this series will be interesting. I do want to say the Pacers did win both of their games in Cleveland during the regular season. But as you mentioned, playoffs are different than the regular season. So I'm going to stick with the hot team right now to win another game in Rocket Arena. Give me the Cavs.
I'm going to keep us in the NBA as well. But we've got a game seven on our hands. The Clippers and the Nuggets tied 3-3 after the Clippers managed to pull out a win on Thursday night, 111-105. Big one here. Who's going to advance, the Nuggets or the Clippers?
I have no hate against Kawhi, James Harden, or anyone else on the Clippers, but I simply just trust the Nuggets more. And this doesn't have anything to do with who's on the team. This has to do with history. The Clippers have not historically been a good playoff team. Even with Kawhi, Paul George, James Harden, other players, Russell Westbrook spending time with the Clippers, there's a reason they moved out of the Staples Center. They got tired of seeing postseason banners for another team when they don't have any of their own. I think that continues. And really, I just got to lean on a guy who averaged a triple-double this year in Nikola Jokic. I think he's going to continue to play very well, and I think that they're able to pull out a very close victory at home.
Yeah, this one's tough. It seems like the obvious answer is take Jokic and the Nuggets, but I think the Clippers have to have some confidence in themselves and understand that they've got the firepower, man. Get it done. Get in there and pull out this win, advance to the second round. I'm counting on them to do it, and I need them to do it. Give me the Clippers.
You're making some bold moves this week.
I went 0-6 last week.
I like it. I like it. I'm going to step into the octagon for our next pick here. Bantamweight division main event on Saturday, later today, May 3rd, at the Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines, Iowa, not to be confused with the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia. The main event, Corey Sanhagen coming in at 17-5. We'll take on Davison Figueredo, who's 24-4-1. Sanhagen, 5'11". Figueredo, just 5'5". They're both coming in at 135 pounds. Sanhagen, just 33 in comparison to Figueredo's 37. Sanhagen also enjoys a 2-inch reach, 70-68. While he fights in a switch stance, Figueredo will be orthodox. The line starts -600 for Sanhagen, +400 for Figueredo. Can Figueredo come out with the upset, or will Sanhagen handle business?
I am a little bit surprised that the odds are so heavily in Sanhagen's favor. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to go with the veteran here. I'm going to go with Figueredo to pick up the win here. Give me the Brazilian.
I absolutely love Davison Figueredo. I think he's one of the best fighters we've ever seen in the bantamweight division. I think he's one of the best fighters we've ever seen pound for pound in the UFC. His grappling is fantastic, but he can also go toe-to-toe with any guy in a ring at any time and box with you all day long. He has unreal stamina, and I think he's a guy that really can go. But if you've seen Corey Sanhagen in the last 6 months, the last year, the dude's an absolute beast right now, an absolute beast. And I think the 6 inches in height advantage and the 2 inches in the height and the 4 years in age that he has to his advantage are going to be huge. I'm going to take Sanhagen.
That's fair. I usually take the Young Bucks in these, but I'm not going against Davison there.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair. That's a fair assumption.
Let's get back to the hardwood. We got another game one kicking off, tipping off, I guess I should say, on May the 5th. That's on Monday. And I think a lot of people might not agree with this. I think this is the Eastern Conference Finals. I think whoever comes out of this one's going to the dance. The Celtics are hosting game one against the Knicks. It's basketball royalty. Who you got, DJ, in game one?
I'm going to go with the Celtics. I think this one's pretty clear. It's extremely hard to beat the Celtics in TD Garden. Not saying that the Knicks can't do it, but it's going to be rough. Boston won this series 4-0 in the regular season as well, so that's going to play some factor. I think it'll help the Knicks get up a little bit. But I at least have game one going to the Celtics.
Yeah, I think the Knicks will be competitive in this series. I do think Boston will eventually win it, probably in six. But that said, they got to win game one for that to happen. I'm going to the Celtics. I think they've got the Knicks number.
That's going to get us over into our last pick of the week. This time, this pick, it's a multifaceted pick. We're going to be picking a series for the MLB this weekend, and that's going to be between the Padres. The Padres from San Diego and the Yankees from New York. This series starts on Monday. This series is happening in New York at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. Yankees 18-13, 10-5 at home. The Padres 19-11, 5-7 on the road. The Padres are putting out King. They're undecided for who they will pitch on Tuesday. And then they will have Mr. Cease out there on Wednesday. contrary, going backwards, the Yankees will put out Freed on Wednesday. On Tuesday, they're going to drop out Carrasco. And then on Monday, they are starting Rodon. Will the Yankees continue their successful ways after everybody's caught up with the torpedo bats? Or will the Padres continue to be one of the best teams in baseball and try and push out that lead while they fight in a very heavy division?
I think this one being in New York helps the Yankees out quite a bit. Padres have struggled a little bit here on the road, here and there. They came up here to Detroit and lost the series too. This one is tough. I'm not going to lie, but as much as I don't want to, I feel like I got to pick the Yankees at this one. They're at home. They've got the advantage. They know who they're pitching all 3 days. I know that's not the biggest deal in the world, but I think the bats will be hot for them this week. So I'm going to stick with the Yankees.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the Yankees too. I think this is just a matter of playing in Yankee Stadium is a special place to be, and it really helps out the whole team, the home team, I think, more than anyone else. So I got the Yankees, and so do you, which means we got an interesting week on our hands with these picks. I've got the Nuggets. You've got the Clippers. I've got the Defenders. You have the Panthers. I have Sanhagen. You have Figueredo. But we both have the Yankees, Celtics, and Cavs. Get us into another weekend, sir.
Oh, boy. I was thinking we had even more discrepancies there. I don't know if I just take my lead back. But I'll be happy if I can go 3-3 and get the three that I need. Baby steps, improvement, Detroit Pistons style, right? All right, that's going to do it for us this week. We're going to check out of here and get back to you next week, same time, Saturday, 10 a.m., right here on 95.3 WBCK. For Dejan, I'm Jacob Harrison. Y'all take it easy. We'll see you next time.
Join Jacob Harrison and Dejan Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.